For the Lyman Ag Supply and the Family Vision Center, a Family Vision Center in Atlantic, of course, and guess where the Lyman Ag Center is? That's in Lyman. This is Bob Evensy, and with me is Brian Smith, Conservation District Supervisor on this morning's Conservation Report. You keep changing titles, and I get lost on who you really are, but you're still Brian Smith.
I am. I'm sorry. I don't mean to confuse you, Bob. Okay, about that.
We'll get that done. You're, as we tape this, a little bit, your eyes are a little droopy, like you might be tired. What's the deal?
Well, was out till about 3:30 this morning, counting raccoons and deer on our annual spring spotlight survey. And so myself and wildlife biologist Brian Hickman from here in town were out counting critters last night, mm-hmm. or this morning, I guess.
That's been going on since, I think, back in the 70s somewhere. It's a long-time program. Yes. This is kind of like your pheasant count, only you do it longer and you do it at night. And tell me how you go about this. It's a two-man operation, evidently.
It is. So to try and be succinct about it, like you said, this was started years ago. Again, just like the August roadside pheasant survey, same parameters. We have to have certain weather conditions. Winds have to be under certain speeds. Humidity's at a certain level. Again, same time frame. We run it every year prior to leaf out because we have to be able to see into the trees and so on and so forth. And we drive at 20 miles per hour or less on the same route every year, running a spotlight out of both the passenger and driver's side of the vehicle. And we count deer and raccoon is kind of what the survey started out counting. And, back in the 70s when fur prices were so high, they wanted to know if the high fur prices were impacting raccoon numbers and so on and so forth. So this was a study they developed. And we also count any other fur bears, fox, possums, skunks, bobcats. We've seen river otters, mink, muskrats, beavers, so we count all fur bears essentially. And we record those. Of course, since I started, telling my age a little bit here, but since I started, we've progressed from simply paper and marking them down and just counting them to now we've got GPS involved, and now we've got laser range finders. So not only when we see the deer do we have to count how many there are, but now we have to actually get a degree from the vehicle that they are, like on a compass. We have to record what degree they are, and laser range find how far they are from the vehicle. And again, that's stuff that's way over my head. I was not as particularly good at statistics in college, but the wildlife biologists, they input that data into their computers and their programs and their indices, and it spits out numbers and it gives us the results in the end.
I kind of wonder what some of those figures would be worth in the end product. What direction from your car is what difference does that make?
Has something to do with the transect line. I don't know. That's one of those things that's why I said it's way above me. But yeah. I can say that just our preliminary. Of course, this will all be this is done all over the state. And it will be all compiled into one report that will be released later on. But I can tell you just initially here in Cass County last night, at least, our deer numbers were about the same that they have been for the last 3 years. We were right in that same ballpark. And just anecdotally, it seemed like raccoon numbers were up, which would make sense with the lack of trapping that occurred this last fall because fur prices were so low. But again, those numbers will come out in concrete, and actually this year they're doing something a little different. They're going to have to run those same routes again. So Grant is going to get the pleasure of
the
running the routes as well. So they're going to do a little further statistical analysis to see how accurate the survey is and whether they need to keep doing it the same way or whether they need to change it up to get more accurate numbers.
Yeah, 20 mile an hour, that would be almost 3 hours if you drove straight through, but you got to stop and do all the computations and everything, so no wonder you didn't get in until 3 o'clock.
Sure. And we run a northern route, so, last night, or again, I keep saying last night, this morning, we started up north and just a little bit west of Marnie on the county line and ran east all the way over to the east county line. Then we dropped down south of Messina to the county line and worked from east to west back to the Pottawatomie County line. So had to run to them. And, yes, that's why it was 3:30 in the morning and darn near 4 o'clock when I got home and got to bed.
Yeah, okay. Well, good to see you working hard for getting our money out of you.
I'm trying to earn my money, Bob.
Okay. Let's talk about fishing. I don't know whether there's much going on yet. The water's pretty cold yet, isn't it?
About 50 degrees what I got, what I had yesterday. And the crappies are biting at Lake Anita. I know crappies are biting in, start biting the farm ponds. Of course, those smaller bodies of water that warm up more quickly, those fish will start biting. But they've been really hammering the crappies at Lake Anita. They're in the first arm of the lake there by the pontoon docks, what we call Crappie Cove, or what's always been called Crappie Cove. And they're picking up a few bluegills in there as well. But the crappies have been really hot and heavy.
Okay, people are out doing fishing, particularly if they're boat fishing. Well, even fishing off the jetties and everything, you need to be careful and stay out of the water, because that 50-degree temperature can give you hypothermia pretty doggone quick.
You know, that's right, Bob. It's very deceptive. You know, obviously this weekend they're calling from, I heard this morning on the radio, is 75 degrees tomorrow on Sunday or something like that. So it can be deceptive. We get these, you know, the sunshine and these warm air temperatures. People are breaking out the flip-flops, the shorts, the short-sleeve T-shirts. And that water's, like we just said, between 49 and 50 degrees. And you get in that water, and especially if you don't have a life jacket on, now not only are you struggling to swim to shore or back to your boat or whatever, but now you're struggling to stay afloat as well, and that will wear a person out quickly. So please be careful. Please wear those life jackets, those PFDs, personal flotation devices. That way, if you would unintentionally go in the water, at least you don't have to burn energy staying above on top of the water. You can focus on getting somewhere to safety. So please be careful and wear that life jacket.
You bet. Okay, let's get out of the water and get into upland hunting. And this is the time of year when the turkey hunters are really fired up. In fact, the youth started this morning at half hour before sunrise on their special season. And the adults, I guess, or all others besides the teens, will be starting on the 17th, a week from Monday. So things are really happening.
That is correct. Last weekend I was over in southern Iowa, over on the Bloomfield, Albia area, and saw some turkeys strutting over there. And yes, the youth started this morning, and hopefully they're doing well. They've got good weather for it. So they're hopefully getting out and about this weekend. And of course, now they've got a full week with two weekends in there. So that runs through the 16th. And then starting the 17th, like you said, that's that traditional first turkey season that runs Monday the 17th through Thursday the 20th before second season kicks in. So.
You bet. The home office, the DNR in Des Moines, sent out, I think, two pages of safety tips for turkey hunting, and all of them are valid. There are a lot of things that you really need to pay attention to.
Yeah. You know, I always hate to say I've seen it all, because I've not seen it all, and every time I say that, I see something new. But I've seen a lot of things. You know, I've seen individuals shot drinking from a Pepsi can because it's, you know, red and blue. I've seen saw one individual shot drinking out of a Budweiser can because it was, you know, white and red. Mm-hmm. You know, red bandanas, blue bandanas, sneaking up on what they think's a turkey goblin when it's really a person. So boy, you just can't be too safe out there. And you know, I encourage people to throw on blaze orange walking in and out, especially, and just being really careful, especially on public ground. But a lot of people say, well, I'm on private ground, I'm the only one hunting. Well, you may be the only one legally hunting there or have permission to hunt there, but you know, people do trespass and intentionally and sometimes unintentionally. So yeah, just really be careful.
Quite a few years ago, I know there was a youngster that was turkey hunting and had white tennis shoes on, and he was sitting and put his foot up on a log, you know, kind of leaning back, and he got his foot shot because that looked – and I had to tell a story on myself as I grew older in my – I wear a beard, and as it started getting cleaner all the time, one of the few times I ever hunted with somebody, he said, you know, when you were coming back, he said, your beard was just bobbing up and down. And I thought, uh-oh, so I started wearing a net then. So I was not aware of that was going on.
And what it boils down to is, you know, if you're the one, if you're the one pulling the trigger, you have got to positively, absolutely identify that target.
Right.
Cardinal rule, you know, one of the top, you know, two or three cardinal rules of safe gun handling and hunting is identifying your target, positively knowing what you're shooting at.
Mm-hmm. They're walking through the timber. They sound like a human being walking along, and there's a lot of things that can screw you up. I've been reading a little bit about a turkey hunting tactic that I think is a recipe for disaster. That's using a fan to sneak up on a turkey, to hide behind a fan and move. That is about as dumb a thing as I can think of.
Well, you know, what am I trying to say?
We're speaking of fans, not
you know, turkey fans,
turkey
right?
Feather, turkey tail right. All fanned out.
Well, you know, that started a number of years ago with a guy by the name of Mel Dutton up in South Dakota, and he did that with pronghorn antelope, took advantage of their territorial instincts during the rut, and he would carry a essentially like a plywood cutout of another pronghorn, and hiding behind that, he could literally walk up within bow distance of that mm-hmm. of that pronghorn. And now if humans have decided, well, if that works for critters like that, maybe it'll work for turkeys. And apparently it does. I've never done it, but I've got friends that do it. I know some officers that have done it, and they said it's scary effective.
Really?
So, but you're right, from a safety standpoint, it could create some real problems if you're not, you know, it's completely legal, nothing, you know, there's nothing
mm-hmm.
illegal
yeah, no,
or,
no.
you know,
yes.
unethical about it, but it could create some real safety hazards. So be aware that there are some folks out there that are doing that.
You bet. You're talking about using the cutout. Guys used to hunt snow geese that way. They'd cut out a cow shake, and they could move mm-hmm. that closer and closer, and
yep.
they'd work. And
same concept.
Yeah,
yes.
So a lot of ways to do things, you know, some right and maybe some not so right. We're rolling along. We're just about out of time. We'll just give everybody a reminder to behave themselves. In fact, if I can find my note, we have a guy that did not behave himself, and he shot a doe off of the road and got caught at it, so he got fined for that, plus shooting the deer, plus the reparations, and it cost him $585 in fine and $1,500 for replacing the deer. So I like to see people getting nailed and the magistrates sticking to it.
And I'll throw in, you know, again, I was born and raised in Southwest Iowa. It was one of the biggest violations I saw growing up was, you know, running deer with pickups and using radios and shooting out the windows. And
oh, sure.
And moved back here, and having become the district supervisor, I've made that a priority for myself and for my officers to address those very violations. And so we're going to be cracking down on them as much as we can. And folks can plan on losing their, if they're using radios, they can plan on losing their radio, losing their gun, losing the deer, and some pretty hefty fines. So,
super. Yeah, it used to be there for a stretch of time. If you didn't have a pickup roll over two or three times during the week, why, the guys weren't really trying.
And of course,
crazy.
Not everyone's doing that. I don't want to paint everybody with the same broad brush, but if you are, we're looking for you, and we're going to catch you eventually.
Okay. Brian, good to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
For Lyman Ag Center and the Family Vision Center in downtown Atlantic, it's been Bob Evensee along with Brian Smith, the law enforcement supervisor for Southwest Iowa on this morning's Conservation Report.